This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A possible settlement on foreclosure gate.
The White House wants $20 billion shaved off people's mortgages.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Thanks for joining us with our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, February 24th. Coming up, checking in on China as anti-government protests continue around the world. There's some new terms on the do not search list.
Also, as the price of cotton rises, so does the cost of hotel rooms. We'll explain all that and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
The House Financial Services Committee has scheduled a vote for next week to shut down the Obama administration's programs aimed at helping struggling homeowners. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal reports this morning the White House wants a settlement to solve disputes over mortgage documentation. Remember, foreclosure gate. The Obama administration is asking banks to trim $20 billion from the mortgages of some homeowners.
Nick Timiraos is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and he's with us now from New York. Good morning.
Morning.
So how is this plan going to work?
Well, it's still very much in flux, and it depends on getting a bunch of different regulators and state attorneys general and federal agencies to agree on a settlement, the broad outlines of which will have banks write down loan principal for borrowers who owe more than their homes are worth. And this is as part of a settlement for a lot of the mortgage miscues that banks have had over the past 6 months when it comes to collecting payments and properly foreclosing on folks.
When you say write down, you mean reducing the principal on the loan, right?
Exactly. So a number of economists are saying, look, you need to reduce the amount of money they owe when you modify their mortgage so that they're less likely to fall into foreclosure if they run into problems paying their loans.
If we're talking about reducing how much some mortgage holders will owe, what parties are going to pay into that fund?
Mortgage servicers have dropped the ball at many stages in the process, and therefore these servicers, mostly banks, will have to pay for write-downs. And this is different from in the past where the investor that owns the loan would have to reduce the principal and take the hit.
What happens if the White House can't get everyone on board with this plan?
The idea here is that if you have a lot of different agencies doing their own thing, they each come up with their own code of conduct for servicers, they each have their own settlement, it's going to prolong this process, it's going to create more uncertainty for the banks and for the housing market. So the administration's interest here is to get everybody to agree on a number that's large enough to satisfy those agencies and the state attorneys general, and that it's not too large to turn off some of the bank regulators that are worried about having something that's overly or disproportionately large. There's no silver bullet for the housing market. This could help on the margins, but the idea here is that what we've been doing has not worked.
Nick Timiraos, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, joining us from New York. Nick, thanks.
All right, thanks so much.
The number of Americans filing for first-time jobless benefits dropped by 22,000 to 391,000 last week. Now, the four-week moving average is at its lowest level in 2.5 years. Also, General Motors said this morning it made its first annual profit in 6 years last year.
But the big economic story today continues to be oil, oil, oil. Prices of oil are hovering right around $100 a barrel as a result of all the unrest in the Arab world. Let's bring in Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us now from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So good news on weekly jobless claims, good news from GM, but it does seem like the big economic story today is the rising price of oil.
Well, certainly that is a big economic news today. And unfortunately, we don't live in a vacuum. And if we lived in a vacuum, we could just take the other data today and say, well, let's run with it and have a good day. Unfortunately, the Middle East is not having such a great day. And not only do we have oil prices surging, we also have uncertainty about what's going to happen in other countries outside of Libya. Libya itself looking like it's in quite a mess, maybe falling into anarchy at this stage of the game.
And when you put it all in context, when you take the good and the bad, are we looking at a situation where we could fall back into a double dip recession as a result of what's going on in the Middle East?
Well, it's always a risk. The good news is the Saudi Arabia can make up for the lost oil in Libya. They can up production, and they've already promised to up production. And although some people are questioning that, I think they will step up to the plate and actually make up for that shortfall in oil. That won't totally reverse all the increases in oil prices that we've seen, but make them somewhat more manageable as we go forward. It's hard to escape, though, what political uncertainty means in the Middle East, along with the oil prices. And this could put a bit of a damper on a recovery that was really regaining some momentum.
That old word, uncertainty, that we don't like very much. Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks so much as always.
Thank you very much.
Well, the oil that's $100 a barrel or more is the oil that's being sold here in the United States. A barrel of oil from the Brent oil field in the North Sea has been over $103 for weeks. And today, Brent crude costs $119 a barrel. Oil from Saudi Arabia or Libya have different price tags as well. It's confusing, isn't it? Well, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is here with us from London with an oil primer of sorts, trying to sort things out for us. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Isn't all oil basically the same?
No, there's a big range in the quality of crude, in the purity of the product, in the lingo of the oil industry. The lighter and sweeter the crude is, the higher the quality. WTI, West Texas, is actually sweeter than Brent. Brent is a bit more sour.
So how do they know that? Who tastes the oil?
Well, they don't actually. It's a reference to the level of sulfur in the crude. The more sulfur, the more sour the oil is. The more refining is required then to turn it into a product like gasoline.
And then if oil from Texas is better, why isn't it more expensive?
This is a very good point. I mean, it's because West Texas is delivered at a fixed location in the middle of the United States, in Cushing, Oklahoma. Not much good for thirsty emerging economies. Here's Nick McGregor of Brokers Redmayne Bentley.
Demand has changed, and the fastest growing markets are from emerging economies, and a delivery point in the USA is not necessarily convenient for all users.
Brent crude, on the other hand, can flow more easily to the outside world. The preeminence of Brent, therefore, is a symbol of the relative shift in economic growth away from the United States.
Into those emerging markets. All right, Stephen Beard joining us from London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Google is now in part an energy company. The company's venture capital arm is touting a $20 million investment in a next-generation energy efficiency firm. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
In Silicon Valley yesterday, Google declared the future is not in silicon, at least not in energy conversion. Our lives are full of conversions, from AC power to DC and back, say when you plug in your laptop. Those waste a lot of energy in the form of heat. But the startup backed by Google claims it can cut 90% of that waste by using a material called gallium nitride instead of silicon. Google Ventures' Bill Maris says these efficiencies can make products smaller. Take my audio recorder's power plug.
This brick that I'm holding that is powering your microphone will disappear eventually. And you won't find yourself, like I do often in a hotel, scrambling for, I forgot my converter.
The new company is called Transform. Legendary venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins is also investing. The firm's Randy Commissar says the public cares about energy security, creating opportunities for investment.
If you don't have that, you'll find that private capital flees to easier things like social networking.
Transform claims its technology could one day save enough energy to power the whole West Coast. In Silicon Valley, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, February 24th. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Now let's get to the global perspective. What's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world?
Now to part of the reason why oil is so expensive these days. In Libya, there are reports hundreds of protesters have been killed and a lot of folks injured too in the latest violence there. People are fleeing the country, and as refugees flow out, relief supplies flow in, including from neighboring Egypt. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is in Cairo.
Egyptians are watching what's going on in Libya obsessively, and not just because 1.5 million of their countrymen work there in oil and construction. Egyptians see their revolution spreading east and west, and they're sending more than just moral support. On a busy Cairo street corner, Egyptian architect Mohammed Adel is telling dozens of young volunteers how many loads of food and medicine to pile into waiting trucks. They've raised money to pay for the supplies.
The first day, we collected like 50 Egyptian pounds. The second day, it was 160,000 Egyptian pounds.
That's more than $30,000 raised in this one Libyan relief effort. And how did it start?
We decided to help them, and we made a page on the event on the Facebook to help gather donations.
Trucks left from 5 locations around Cairo last night for the 10-hour road trip to the Libyan border. Another convoy will be loaded today. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Well, as the violence continues in Libya, the protests continue in Bahrain and in Yemen. And there are calls for more demonstrations in China in a dozen cities this Sunday. In fact, the U.S. ambassador to China, John Huntsman, was spotted at a protest last weekend, and online searches for his name have been blocked in China as a result. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz joins us now from Shanghai with more on this story. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Jeremy.
So I assume the government in Beijing would rather the Libyan situation not be the talk of the town.
Definitely not. And the government is doing what it usually does when it feels threatened like this. And it's blocking certain search terms related to the unrest in the Middle East. It does this by relying on companies that operate search engines to police their own sites. But it also is able to unilaterally shut down your server connection if you enter a search term that is particularly sensitive. And that's what we've seen here with the term Jasmine Revolution, which refers to the protests spreading throughout the Middle East.
All right, Rob, well, show us what you mean. Google the term Jasmine Revolution.
Okay, so here I am. I'm typing Jasmine Revolution in Chinese, and here's what pops up on my screen. The connection is reset. The site is temporarily unavailable. So that's an error message, and this is usually what pops up whenever you enter a search term that China's government doesn't want you to know more about. So the dangerous term this week happens to be Jasmine Revolution. Even the single word Jasmine has been blocked on Google. It's kind of funny because Jasmine is the name of a popular folk song in China. In fact, Chinese President Hu Jintao is a big fan of this song, and there's a video of him singing this song on many Chinese sites. So it turns out that even President Hu is being blocked in this latest campaign from his own central propaganda department.
Oh, the negative side effects of blocking search terms. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz joining us from Shanghai. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Jeremy.
To New Mexico now, a state with a $450 million deficit and, Steve, a brand new spaceport.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
That's right. Taxpayers in the state have pumped more than $100 million into the project, which is supposed to make New Mexico the hub for space tourism. Mm-hmm. But according to the New York Times, the state's budget woes are causing some to rethink the public investments.
Yeah.
But if they want to keep that spaceport, I thought maybe it's time to start taxing those UFOs in Roswell.
There are so many of them, too.
Exactly. You never know when they're going to show up.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, the 24th of February. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles and on Twitter at Radio Chio.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York on Twitter at Jeremy Hobson. And you can also give us your feedback by going to marketplace.org and clicking on the link that says contact. And we do read all of those emails.
Every morning. We sift through all of them. Absolutely.
We sift through all of them. A vote about union rights is expected today in Wisconsin as that state's Republican governor moves ahead with his plan to tackle the state's budget deficit. In Ohio, a similar plan to strip public workers of their collective bargaining rights is being scaled back a bit. For more on all the budget battles that are going on in state houses across the country and in Washington. Let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jeremy.
So obviously unions have become the big story in Wisconsin, but as states across the country look at their budgets, what other things are they focusing on?
Look, Jeremy, there's really one story when it comes to state budgets, and that story is health care, specifically the Medicaid program. And this is the joint federal-state program, and it's health care for the poor, the elderly, the vulnerable.
And what are states doing to tackle that?
Well, states are having to tackle. Let me just give you one number. I think this really encapsulates the whole story. So you go back a quarter century ago. States spent 50% more on higher education than on Medicaid. Today, they spend 50% more on Medicaid than higher education.
Wow.
And that budget keeps growing and growing and growing. So they're having to do things like make cuts and also trying to reduce their spending or their funding.
And what are they doing?
Well, let's take, for example, Arizona. Arizona has decided, or they proposed, eliminating Medicaid coverage for 280,000 people. Then you look at California, which is leaning toward, rather than just sort of cutting people, it's sort of leaning more toward a solution where it's saying, you know, we're just not going to pay as much. We're just going to cut the funding. And a lot of the cuts are going toward the elderly, the vulnerable with long-term care. So governors are being forced to make really tough decisions.
And not just governors. This is an issue in Washington with the federal budget as well.
You know, we're really worried about these budget deficits. We're talking about these budget deficits in the news. But really, whether it's on the federal level or the state level, we don't have a budget deficit problem. We have a long-term health care problem. So federal level, state level, it's health care, health care, health care.
And Chris, does the Obama health care law that was passed last year, is that going to be part of the solution to this problem?
It's part of the solution, but boy, it's a very small step. We need to revisit this whole area again and again.
Yippee! Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot.
Well, Jeremy and Chris, we could get word as soon as today from the Air Force on who gets the all-important $35 billion contract to build new refueling planes. Boeing and Europe's EADS have been battling over this prize for a long time now, and their dogfight has spilled over onto the airwaves of Washington. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
So I'm brushing my teeth the other night. I flip on the radio for the latest headlines and hear this.
The Pentagon is deciding who will build the next generation of military aerial refueling tankers. And EADS North America has the only modern tanker.
Why do I have to listen to this? I have no say on who gets the contract. But a few nights later, toothbrush poised, I hear this improbable ad from Boeing. Guys gathered around the water cooler discussing not football, but aerial refueling tankers.
That's the Boeing KCX New Gen tanker. It's the tanker with the jobs, not the joke.
Make it stop. Not a chance.
Washington is the epicenter for us to tell our story.
Guy Hicks is an EADS spokesman. He's been lobbying tanker ads for more than 6 years and isn't about to hold his fire. Neither is Boeing's PR guy, William Barksdale.
We're trying to communicate to a lot of audiences why we have the right airplane.
The two defense giants are spending millions on print, online, and radio ads. Ad experts say Boeing and EADS are aiming their messages at just a handful of Pentagon types. Adam Hampft is a marketing consultant in New York.
If you get the right people, they are so important that you're willing to overspend in order to get them.
Hampft says all kinds of businesses use this strategy. In L.A., movie studios pray that judges for the Academy Awards might be stuck in traffic and hear their ads. But the Academy Award ads end after the winners are announced. We're not so lucky in D.C. Whoever loses the tanker competition is expected to appeal and ratchet up the ad war. Bad news for those of us who just want to brush in peace and go to bed. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, we keep hearing about the price of oil headed north, of course, yeah. $100, $103 a barrel or more. Did you see the price of cotton? Well, we've reported on this, too.
It's
also
high.
Up. Yeah. Since last July, it's been up like 110%, more than doubled. Well, the commodities rise has made a lot of things less hospitable, like a more expensive hotel bill. Some chains of hotels have raised their prices to make up for the increased costs of bed sheets and linens.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah. I say one word. There's one answer for all of this, Jeremy.
What?
Polyester.
What about silk? Couldn't we have silk sheets in all
those? Silk's going to be too expensive. Too expensive, silk
sheets. Maybe not in comparison anymore.
Perhaps.
I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, it is a hot commodity these days, old cotton. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.